My name is Lily, and I've had hidradenitis suppurativa, HS, for years. I finally found some relief since taking Cosentyx. Relief means I can show up more.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe hidradenitis suppurativa, HS. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your dermatologist about Cosentyx.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
We've confirmation today that Hamas are going to release the next stage, the next group of hostages as planned before this noon Saturday deadline that President Trump appeared to unilaterally impose on the ceasefire a couple of days ago. This comes hot in the heels of the news yesterday that the US president spoke to both President Vladimir Putin in Russia and Volodymyr Zelensky in Ukraine with a view to coming to some sort of a settlement or some sort of arrangement or some sort of peace deal between those countries. And it hasn't taken long, of course, for Donald Trump's supporters to suggest that this is all further evidence of his diplomatic skill, his masterful way he kind of manipulates people. The art of the deal, I guess, is how they might describe it. Daniel Levy is with me. Daniel is president of the US Middle East Project and a former Israeli peace negotiator. Daniel, you're welcome to the show. I mean, to those claiming that the ceasefire deal being adhered to by Hamas, confirmation of that, that this is another coup for Donald Trump. Are they right?
No, I think we have to distill out a few things. First of all, the fact that a deal was reached at all, which coincided with Trump coming into power, I think there is a reasonable case to be made that the Trump effect shifted the calculation, not of Hamas, but of the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu. Hamas had a quite clear and consistent position. And the deal that Netanyahu eventually agreed to was a deal that was available since May, at least, and which he had previously refused to sign up to, apparently in significant measure because the Israeli prime minister felt that he had the measure of the Biden administration and he could get away with anything. And I think he simply felt that he didn't want to get off on the wrong side of Trump. Now what has happened, and we're in about to enter weekend four of the implementation of the first phase of this deal, is that Trump turned around earlier in this week and said, enough with the dribs and drabs, them coming out, one, two, three, four. Either they're all out, all the remaining Israelis, of course, his ability to show any interest, empathy in Palestinian life has very much followed that of his predecessor, Mr. Biden, which is no interest whatsoever. He's committed to ethnically cleansing the Palestinians. We can come back to that. But what he said in terms of the Israeli hostages is, they must all come out this Saturday at midday or all hell will break loose. The Israeli prime minister then seemed to endorse that. Prior to that being said, Hamas on the Monday had said that the release would not take place unless Israel started implementing those parts of the agreement which it had been dragging its feet on. In particular, that is the entry of shelter, some housing supplies that were supposed to get in that hadn't, some medical supplies, and some of the fuel trucks. Those were among the things that Israel had been violating in terms of its commitments under the deal. We have seen in the last day that Israel has started to rectify those missing pieces of its implementation, and Hamas has said, we will therefore go ahead and do exactly what we said we would do, which is release the three Israelis scheduled for release. And in exchange for that, Israel will release Palestinian prisoners, often held in detention without trial, from Israeli prisons, which is what the bargain says. What seems not to be happening is precisely what Trump, and then lining up and endorsing that, Netanyahu said needed to happen, which is everyone out in one go without agreeing to the rest of the terms that would make that possible. So the capitulation here is by the Israeli side, whether Trump acknowledges that he has capitulated, whether, you know, maybe he saw that Netanyahu was going to drag his heels, and therefore this was a really way of pushing Netanyahu. I don't think it was, but that's perhaps the closest one could get to saying Trump has greased the wheels of further progress here.
So, I mean, as a negotiator then, Daniel, how do you interpret what he has suggested with regard to the Gaza Strip?
The ethnic cleansing of all Palestinians.
Yeah, exactly. So we kind of look at, you know, Mexico and Canada and Greenland to a degree. And everybody at this stage understands the Trump playbook that, you know, there's this kind of bombastic claim, but really it's just a bargaining position. And what he wants is maybe kind of access to rare earth minerals or maybe kind of military bases or kind of better trade deals or a reinterpretation or a renegotiation of NAFTA. He just keeps doubling down on the ethnic cleansing.
And really, it depends how the parties that he's trying to finagle something from, how they respond to that. What is the thing that he is trying to achieve? How realizable that is? How much this is bluff and bluster? What he has achieved is something that I don't think anyone should be proud of, which is he has further encouraged this already existing tendency inside Israeli political discourse, inside Israeli policy planning, to try and finish the job that is a decades-long effort on the part of the State of Israel, beginning with the Nakba and the forced displacement of Palestinians, to remove Palestinians. So he has further empowered the most extreme elements. And this is now, according to the Prime Minister and his defense minister in Israel, this is now the official policy of the Israeli government to try and force the removal of the Palestinians. It's war crimes like that that have landed the Israeli premier with an arrest warrant from the International Criminal Court in the first place. Now, maybe Trump thinks, I'll shake this up a bit, you know. The Arabs will come in. They'll offer something that they haven't offered until now. I don't think it's going to happen. Look, you have the Palestinians themselves, Hamas themselves, have said we don't need to govern Gaza, but Gaza will have to be governed by a body acceptable to us. We're not going to demilitarize while we're under occupation, while we're under further threat of genocide. But there is a Palestinian governing arrangement ready to take over there. Arab states have said that in the right political context, if this isn't just about putting some money in order for Israel to bomb the hell out of it again in a few years, and if this isn't just about subsidizing Israel's occupation, then we will come in the right political context. And the Arab states have already all offered Israel full relations if they end the occupation and the apartheid regime imposed on Palestinians. If Trump wants to claim that things that were already on offer are now magically emerging because of his rather loose relationship with the truth, that these are a result of what he's done, let him claim it. But at the moment, that doesn't seem what he's trying to do. It seems that he is, as American presidents have done in the past, in this respect, let's not pretend he's such an outlier. The Biden administration armed and funded and ran diplomatic and legal and political cover for this genocide for months and months. But in this respect, he's just putting his thumb down on the scales of unrealistic and illegal outcomes, and outcomes that won't be achieved. It's not like Israel was dancing between the raindrops in terms of carrying out a policy in Gaza that was humane or legal or anything. Mm. Israel tried whatever it could for 16 months. The Palestinian people were resilient. The armed resistance could not be crushed because that's not how things work in violent colonial wars of dispossession. So it's not going to work again.
Can I ask you then just very briefly about just one other area, and it's what I mentioned right at the outset as well, these conversations had with Vladimir Putin and Volodymyr Zelensky yesterday. Now, we're not privy to the detail of those conversations. I think one was kind of 2 hours long, the other an hour and a half long. So an awful lot would have been talked about. But I can't be the only one, and I know a lot of people listening to the show who got in touch had the same impression. All of the concessions that seem to have been alluded to, not only by Donald Trump, but also by Pete Hegseth, his defense secretary, were all on the Ukrainian side. They were all about kind of, you know, we're not going back to pre-2040. Forget about that. There's not going to be membership in NATO. Forget about that. There is not going to be some sort of military guarantees provided by the US into the future. Forget about that. I didn't hear kind of, you know, and listen, there's going to be compromise. There has to be on the Ukrainian side. That's the nature of any deal. But I didn't hear any mention of or any indication of what compromise might look like from the Russian side. What did you think?
Anyone might come away with the shock impression that maybe he's not the big genius negotiator after all, having preemptively given up all these things. Listen, and this is, I think, what really matters if you look at these two situations. America does have tremendous leverage over Ukraine. America does have even more leverage over Israel. Now, in one situation, the American president seems to have preemptively gone straight to the realist endgame, which isn't necessarily a bad thing at the end of the day if this is what is going to preserve a lot of Ukrainian lives. But he has gone right there. In the other instance, he has doubled down on the maximalist fantasies of a criminal regime. And the other thing that really bears reminding people, in those two conflicts, there are two leaders, both of whom have international criminal court arrest warrants against their names. One of those is named Vladimir Putin. The other is named Benjamin Netanyahu. One of those two was invited as the first foreign leader to Trump's White House. So the other thing that really hits you square in the face is that once there is no such thing as international law, once legality has been set aside, it's the law of the jungle, and that, terrifyingly, it's not like breaking news. We don't have consistent adherence to international law. But when you abandon everything, and this is where many countries, Europe, are going to have to ask themselves, are we going to go fully along with Trump, or are we going to do some hedging here, and are we going, alongside whatever criminal actions he's conducting, his allies are conducting, the Israelis and others are conducting, are we going to try and thicken the legal and institutional architecture on which this world depends? And that will mean that we have to work with others because America isn't there for that.
Daniel Levy, president of the US Middle East Project, former Israeli peace negotiator. Daniel, always interesting. Thank you for taking the time to speak to us.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.